Hey, this is Adam. We are here in the office of Jeff Sigmund. How are you doing, Jeff?
Good. How are you, Adam?
Cool, good. And we're also joined by Brent Atkison.
Hi, Brent. Hello. How are you doing?
So tell me what you do, Brent.
So I work on the Microsoft IT team doing the network access protection deployment at Microsoft. So we're responsible for the internal deployment in regards to network access protection for IPsec, VPN, and at some point we're going to be looking at some 802.x deployments as well.
Cool. Okay. And tell me what you do, Jeff.
So first I'll say Brent is my first and best customer. So I rely on Brent to actually take the stuff we build here in the engineering group and actually prove that it works. So thank you, Brent.
You're welcome.
I'm Jeff Sigmund. I'm on the Network Access Protection team. I'm in the engineering team. My title is Program Manager. And my job is to... basically, if I were to summarize my job, it would be to hold test and dev together. So the people who develop it write the code and then test the code and then drive that we're going to the right place and that what you get on the DVD when you get it works and does everything you need it to do for NAP. And then also my role would be the I talk to a lot of customers and monitor, are we doing the right things in NAP and is it doing the right stuff?
Okay, cool. And you are the man behind the NAP blog, is that right?
Yes, the NAP blog is my baby. I started it a couple years ago now. And the idea there was there were so many blogs about NAP and NAC, and Microsoft didn't have its own.
Okay.
So that was pretty embarrassing. I was like, whoa, we're way behind. So I tried to create and get some momentum going.
Okay. And how long have you been doing this? How long have you been here?
10 years at Microsoft.
Oh, wow.
Working on my 11th year.
All of it in enterprise networking?
I have been in enterprise networking since 99.
Okay.
So I started in Microsoft support, supporting NT4.0, TCP/IP, RAS, Steelhead. So I always came up through networking.
Okay.
And I've never wanted to leave it.
Cool.
So.
All right. So if you were to give me the 15-second elevator pitch on what NAP is and why I care, what would your pitch be?
I always talk about Blastr because that whenever I talk about Blastr to IT pros, they move around in their chair because it costs them so much money.
Yeah.
And they didn't feel they could do anything about it, and it was all reactionary. Okay. NAP is...
So refresh us a little bit. What happened?
Okay, I'll tell you on my desk what happened. My machine kept rebooting. I actually thought Windows was... I actually had a bug in Windows. I was sitting there writing some code on the IPsec, and my machine just kept rebooting. I'd recycle it, and it would reboot again. So that was day one of Blastr when I was experiencing it. And so what was happening there is remotely... I didn't have a firewall on. Somebody was coming over the network and exploiting a problem in Windows and actually causing Windows to shut down the machine because certain things had crashed. And so that was the end result of Blastr on the operating system I was on. And so what did Microsoft do? We had a senior VP write to all the engineering in Windows and say, stop what you're doing. Put it down. Go to drive to PSS and start taking phone calls. That's what we did in engineering. And so... that cost Microsoft a lot. It cost everybody out in the world a lot. And so NAP was the obvious feature we had to bring to the table. How do we give the IT pro the ability to create a policy that allows him to define who is allowed on his network when and what do they have to be running, things like that. You have to give that guy the control because up until today, he really hasn't had it in the Microsoft world. So we had to give that in Microsoft products. It had to come. And so that's my elevator pitch with them.
Okay.
It should mitigate the next Blastr because all of a sudden you now know, almost real time I'd say, the health of your network. And when I say health, I mean health of Windows clients sitting on the net with an IP address that you've given them on your corporate network. Boom. So
okay.
That's what it gives you.
And
at a high level.
Okay. In terms of availability, when do we get our hands on it?
You get it in Windows Server 2008. I wish I could have given it to you sooner, but Windows Server 2008, I can give it to you. We were going to give it to you in R2, but that didn't happen. So that is February in 2008.
Okay. All right. Now, I understand. So we're getting the product in a little while, but Microsoft's been running it internally for a little while, right?
Yeah, I mean, nearly a year, maybe over a year.
Over a year, I believe, yeah. It's been probably going on a year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the scope of that deployment and how we're using it.
All right. So we basically started a long time ago. We give a bit of history back in the RAS space, back around the time of Blaster and stuff. We started looking at our remote clients coming into the network and everything. We kind of decided that we needed to be able to control access a little bit more granularly based on these, you know, I go to grandma's house and I use her machine. I don't know what's on it. Now all of a sudden that machine's on the network. It's accessing resources that we want to protect and things.
And unfortunately, grandma has a password grabber, grabs all the keystrokes, and then bad things happen.
Yeah. The grandson comes over and
throws
the machine up. So. So we decided we kind of went down this quarantine road in Windows Server 2003, and we worked with the product groups a little bit, and we got something called the Remote Quarantine
server and client,
RQS and RQCs, how we refer to it. So what we then did was we built a lot of custom scripts called, internally called Secure Remote User. But basically these scripts, the idea of it is to check stuff like, I have a firewall enabled, I have antivirus enabled on the machine, all my patches are there, all my updates are there, critical updates that we require for access are there. And we also do some usability things within that script. Basically the idea was to enforce health when I came out of the network and quarantine the user until that health was verified so that they could access it.
And this was all scripts that we kind of developed manually, or was this?
The RQS and RQC was part of the product. Basically, it was fairly simple. It was a key pass that you sent to the server to tell the server, okay, I'm ready to come out of quarantine. So we integrated that into our scripts, but all of this was custom code that we had to go build. It's rather expensive to maintain.
Right.
Every time we have a new operating system that comes out, the scripts have to be updated.
Yeah.
And it's an ongoing process that we're still spending quite a bit of money on to keep going.
They've had a custom NAP basically for years. The only problem is it isn't anything we could sell. It was something that for Microsoft to protect Microsoft IT, it wasn't something productized.
Okay.
And the pain they felt. So we build OSs here, right? We build operating systems. Every time we build a new OS, they have to pay to update this custom thing, and it wouldn't always, you know, they had to hold it together. So, you know, everybody, we got the impression everybody in the world's feeling this pain. Why not productize it? So that's what NAP is.
Yep, so we kind of progressed, and we wanted to get NAP. The other thing we wanted to do was take our lessons learned and some of the stuff that we did with SRU and kind of feed back into the product group. So one of the things, for example, on the current solution is the time to connect and everything. I got to go through a full check every time it happens, and NAP has this concept now of, you know, cache statements of health and everything. So it knows the state of the health. When you come into the network, so your authentication is going to be a lot faster in VPN, for example, assuming the machine's been online and been reachable by, you know, with the quarantine system that you have in place. So anyway, that history kind of shows how we wanted to get, why we wanted to get health on the network in the first place. So back when we started talking about NAP as a product, back around the R2 days is when we started working with the product group on it, we decided that we wanted to primarily focus on IPsec. So we had the RAS space well protected with SRU. We wanted a replacement there so we didn't have to maintain that cost, as well as improve some usability that we could get out of the network access protection piece. But we also wanted to get it on our corporate network, because we really didn't have any controls. We have GPOs that we can push out with some login scripts and those kinds of things, and we have some scanners and things that we can do, but a lot of it's more reactive or not enforceable. And so what we started looking at is how could we use IPsec as a control for network access protection. We worked with the product group to get that out as a feature. Originally it was going to be left out. I think it was going to be 802.1x and VPN only.
Right.
And DHCP.
Right. Okay. You were a huge advantage to us early on, because what you gave us is we had a customer dying for it, and we could talk to him every day. So what do we want to do, Brent? How about this, Brent? How's that sound? And so we could go back and forth. Will this even bite off what Microsoft IT wants to do? And then from there you can go, okay, let's look at the rest of the world. What else can we do to break into more areas that NAP can solve? So he was invaluable early on, because every day we could say, well, we're thinking about this. Does that sound right? Will that solve your business need? Yep. Okay, great. Let's do it. So that was invaluable.
And the one of the advantages that we were looking at too with IPsec is a lot of problems with a lot of the network access control solutions out there today is that you have to have a lot of appliances, you have to have a lot of infrastructure in place to be able to manage the number of clients.
Right
now we're deployed to somewhere in the neighborhood of 120,000 clients, basically just using, you know, the servers and IPsec policy that we have. I think we have I think it's in the neighborhood of 10 servers that we put in place, and we're actually going to consolidate those servers even further to do some of the 802.1x wireless authentication we're doing on Radius today on Windows Server 2003. We're going to move that, and we're going to consolidate those boxes. So our new infrastructure that we had to put in place is actually going to be fairly limited because of the solution we have with IPsec.
Okay, so that's actually an interesting deployment question for someone that's thinking about doing NAP. We're doing IPsec enforcement, so any machines on IPsec are handing off a health statement before they get on, before they can talk on the network.
Right.
You said we've got 120,000 clients, and you're just using 10 servers?
Yeah, we're actually...
Yeah, I was going to say, aren't you actually using 4 NPS servers?
We're actually, yeah, for that specific deployment on the IPsec, we're actually using... depending on how we break the servers out, so there's the HRA component.
Which is the...
Which Health Registration Authority. It sits. We're actually.
Jinx.
we're actually running that on the network policy server, which is Windows Server 2008. So we're running those boxes together, and in those boxes, we actually have worldwide distribution of them in our main data center. So we have some in Redmond. We have two in Redmond, basically two in Dublin, for our European region, European, Middle East, and Africa region, and then we also have two in Asia. So a lot of that just exists for redundancy. At one point, we actually had everything coming back to the two servers in Redmond. But as we think about, you know, the global deployment of this, what happens if we lose a link, you know, for a period of time and whatnot, we wanted some redundancy.
So NAP North America on two servers.
Yep. And then we also, we actually had the world on two servers, and we moved it.
Okay. You had the world on two, and then you thought, link goes down. Okay.
Exactly. The other thing that we had is the CA servers that are issuing the health certificates. So we split up some standalone CA servers to issue the health certificates that the HRA request. And we basically were doing the roll on two of those as well. And we actually added, again, for the regional redundancy, we added two in each of those locations as well. So we're on six and six. So
that's pretty sweet, because one of the things I hear from customers when I go to trade shows, they say, oh, so I hear NAP, I have to rip and replace. Everything WSO3 has to go, everything Windows 2000 has to go. I have to change my Active Directory to WSO8, et cetera, et cetera. False. Just plain false. You can literally get NAP going with one server. They had the world going with two and thought, you know, and started thinking, oh, capacity planning and fault tolerance. And so it really is easy to get started.
Now, part of it is we wanted to validate what kind of loads we could drive, what impact there was going to be to the CAs. I don't know the exact number, but I saw a reference point at one point where we were issuing somewhere in the neighborhood of well over 200,000 certificates a day at one point on
Wow. Off
of a couple CA boxes. So for the health certificate piece specifically. So
right.
There's some issues we found too there, and then in regards to CA database maintenance and cleaning
right.
of things. That'll be some best practices we share, but basically we can fill the disk up pretty quick by not removing those certificates.
We definitely got some best practices from Brent, because NAP IPsec works on issuing a health certificate to a client when he's healthy and removing it when he's not. Thus, you can imagine you have a credential to get to resources when you're healthy. Mm-hmm. When you're not healthy, we rip the credential off and you have no way to get it. And so you can't get to protected resources. That's what NAP IPsec is, the core of it. And so the things Brent discovered were all the kind of keeping it going up over the course of a year, the things that we could do better, that we didn't design as good as we could have, like the database fills up on the CA when you issue 200,000 a day. So Brent reveals that to us, and we go, okay, we have to do something about that before we ship Server 2008. So that was the value, that was one of the many things Brent told us about early, before the customers get their hands on the DVD and we can do something about it. So I owe you dinner, Brent.
So tell me a little bit about how you go about deploying something like this. Did you turn on 120,000 machines overnight? Or
no, so within network access protection, we have a few deployment options. We have three modes, and here we call them, internally we call them a reporting mode, deferred enforcement, or full enforcement. It's not quite that cut and dry, because full enforcement in IPsec, for example, actually relies on the IPsec policy to require that health cert for connectivity as well. So when we say full enforcement, it's really more of a server concept on NPS saying, I'm going to require that this person meet the conditions of health for these system health agents and system health validators before I give it a certificate. And so what we did was we basically started in reporting mode, and we started with one SHA, the WSHA, we call it, the Windows.
Okay, so the SHA is the
Windows System Health Agent, the guy on the client that talks to Security Center. Okay. So the integrated piece on the Windows client for Security Center.
So this is the agent that sits on the client and basically just whatever security policies or health policies you put in place.
It's one of the agents. So there's the Windows, the WSHA, the Windows Security Health Agent. Basically, it ships with Windows Server, Windows Vista out of the box. It's there right now. We enable the NAP service with it. So we push out a GPO that enables the NAP service. We turn on Security Center in the domain so people get some notifications from that as well. And then we set up a reporting mode on the back end. We can say with the WSHA, for example, we can say, I want to make sure firewall is enabled. I want to make sure automatic updates is enabled. And we can actually turn remediation on or off for this stuff as well. So if I turn my automatic updates off, I can have it automatically turned back on. We did not do that for the reporting mode piece. So the first thing we wanted to do was just
assess,
turn it on, right, and get some data back in around it. We could also check Windows Update for patches. We didn't use that since we're an enterprise. We're focusing on an SMS back-end piece as well as an SMS client that we're working to push out.
Okay.
And then it also checks to make sure the antivirus, and if you want, anti-malware is there as well. So like Windows Defender, for example, turned on.
So tell him what you found when you first turned on reporting mode. We blogged about this, and we discussed this on the web, but the coolest thing I love to hear you talk about is when you flip on reporting mode and you start assessing North America and you start actually finding out what people have on and don't have on. So will you discuss that a bit? Meaning, how many people you saw didn't have the firewall on, didn't have an AV installed, and were sitting on the corporate network?
So, yeah, I guess, we had group policies in place, right? So did you, when you turned on reporting mode, did the network look the way you expected it to? Was the health of the network what you expected? Or tell me...
Yeah,
what's your first reports look like?
So part of the challenge is when we use the WSHA, we generally are sitting around at 89%, 90%, 91%, 92% health when we're just looking at a reporting mode, going off memory here a little bit. And basically, when we looked at that, I lost my thought.
Well, what I was remembering you shared with me was you had something on the order of 10 to 20,000 machines not with the firewall or AV, some combination off. That's what I remembered. And I reacted to that by going, whoa. And then we saw, over the course of the next month, we saw as they were getting these, you might have restricted access in the next 6 months. We saw people, okay, fine. You want me to install AV? I will. Stop bothering me. I'll install antivirus. And then they do that and the prompts go away.
Okay. So was that deferred enforcement then?
That's deferred enforcement. Okay. That's where you warn the guy, at this date, you may lose network access. And you can do that on the Windows system. All the things that Security Center monitors, you can do that out of the box. So no additional software with NAP, you can do that.
Right.
And he saw his compliance graph where people... I loved it because you didn't turn on any enforcement. And then the graph just starts going, okay, fine, I'll do firewall and antivirus. And so you by annoying them with a bubble, basically, mm-hmm. you get compliance without ever enforcing anything. And so I was like, yep, there we go.
Okay.
So that was great.
So can you talk about how it's affected help desk calls or...
So since we're actually still in the second phase, so we have the reporting mode, the deferred enforcement mode, we've actually seen almost no impact to help desk at all. One of the things we're not doing, though, is actually restricting access to anything. So we're just notifying the user at this point.
I think
throughout the 120,000 machines that we have turned on a reporting mode, we have another somewhere in the neighborhood of 80,000 machines in what we call deferred enforcement, so they actually get pop-ups about their health state.
Oh, okay.
And with that, I think we maybe have gotten 20 to 30 help desk tickets over the course of the deployment within the last probably 6 months.
6 months, 30 calls? That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good. So we very, very little impact. There's been a lot of concern from management around, what kind of noise is this going to create and everything else. And so far, the impact of just notifying them isn't there. We wouldn't expect it to be. When we turned on deferred enforcement, though, one of the key things we did was we turned on automatic remediation as well. So if somebody turns their firewall off, we turn it back on for them automatically and immediately. And we expected some more noise from that as well because, people need to turn off, their firewall, for example, maybe to get some testing done, for example. And that's been very minimal. The noise there on that has been almost non-existent as well. I think I've heard from one or two people in the corporation that have a reason to have it off. So I think a lot of what we found with the people that were moving from non-compliant to compliance was that they just probably didn't know that, it was non-compliant to begin with.
Right.
So the way we started the pilot, too, was to kind of focus. We started with 100 machines or so. We run it against those machines, get some feedback from small user groups. And then what we actually did was we were actually pretty progressive about it and actually went to our Redmond domain, which is one of our biggest domains and users, and we actually went from, zero to, 40,000, overnight.
Overnight?
Yeah, basically.
Wow.
So the goal there was really...
Thanks for trusting us, by the way.
Well, the thing is there was very little risk in it, right? So since we're in a reporting mode and everything, as long as there wasn't a huge bug in the product, that reporting mode equaled enforcement mode.
Yeah.
And again, we had to tie IPsec policy to that, so even there we didn't really have a risk unless we had, you know, stacking bugs or something. There really wasn't a risk to just going out and turning it on, because we're not restricting anything if it fails. We get some feedback that it failed, but we don't actually cause any impact on the network.
Okay.
So.
Now, you mentioned a couple of times that you're doing IPsec enforcement, and I know NAP supports some other models. Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, how the decision process? Did you look at 802.1x? Did you look at DHCP? How did you settle on IPsec?
Yeah, we actually probably will end up using all of them in some scenarios. For example, VPN we do plan on using. We're actually in pilot with that right now. We have, you know, 50-plus people using VPN with more enforcement. One of the reasons we're a little slower on the VPN side is that we already had the security in place there, and so we have to maintain that security level when we go forward. So we have to make sure that the products are working in enforcement mode, which means that people are getting remediated and everything right away. All the infrastructure set up for remediation for that and everything else, so we can get them out. And it wasn't just the WSHA we had to do that with. We actually had to put SMS on the boxes with the SMS, SHA, and SHV pair.
So SMS integrates with NAP, is what he's saying there.
Yeah.
Okay. So the new version of SMS, SCCM 2007.
Configuration Manager.
System Configuration.
System Center.
System Center Configuration Manager 2007. They integrate with NAP.
Okay.
And so the agent you can get on the box, he's doing VPN enforcement with antivirus, SMS, and the Windows System Health Security Center stuff.
Yep.
Okay. So he has to keep that bar. He can't lessen his security when you VPN in. He has to maintain what he's had for years. And so that's why you're saying the VPN pilot goes a little bit slower than CorpNet.
Yeah, we had to make sure all the pieces were in place. But right now on the Redmond domain, we're only really doing deferred enforcément on the WSHA. We'll add in a SCCM piece as well as the eTrust piece as we move forward. The 802.1x, we don't actually have a deployment on right now. I think Jeff's team actually has an internal document deployment of that.
But we
do have a DHCP deployment.
The network in this office, I cannot get an IP address if I'm not healthy on NAP 802.1x. I have no connectivity. So that's one of the things we depend on Brent, and then inside the engineering team, we depend on, I can't do my daily work if NAP is failing. So that way, all 50 or 100 or million of us on the NAP team, whatever it is, we can't do our daily work if NAP fails.
You feel the pain that
customers would. Yeah, we feel the pain, and so what happens is you'll see something maybe go down, maybe a server and the back end goes down. Everybody leaves their office and goes and piles in the guy who owns the server, and we work out the bug, and it's a forcing function of doing our daily work.
It's also one of the things we require from them is to actually dog food, which is an internal term. I don't know if we need to go into that, but basically they got to run it so they can prove to us that it works at some basic level before we make our customers feel that pain as well.
We eat our own dog food, right?
Right.
We're not going to go out and tell a customer to deploy this without having done it and gone through it all.
The first person that uses NAP should not be a person that has the DVD. It should be internally right before it leaves the door.
Cool. And then, so in DHCP, we actually have a deployment of that in four buildings across the campus, again, in reporting mode here. DHCP, for the scope and size of Microsoft and what we're trying to do, we want to, you know, reach over 300,000-plus machines at some point and everything. It would require quite a bit more management in terms of exception processes and things than what we'd want to do with IPsec. So IPsec gives us a bit more control in those regards. DHCP we are looking at, though, for locking down some of the unmanaged space, we call it, or the self-managed space, places where they're not domain joined. DHCP is actually a great solution for us to be able to go in there and set up some basic controls to get some reporting out of that. Those lab spaces and stuff where maybe we are completely blind today.
So. Nice. So you'll use NAP to map your network a bit to understand what's in this unmanaged space. They can't get an IP address if they don't.
So a good example, one of the things we're thinking about there, and this is all, we haven't done this yet, but one of the things we're thinking about is we do a web browser hijack, for example, and we make the person have the NAP service on just to get it past, just to get an IP, and that way we at least get some reporting. We don't actually cause any impact to the users other than that one time to turn the service on, since we don't have any control to turn the service on.
Because you can't do group policy.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so that's how you're bootstrapping the guy.
Exactly.
Okay. nice.
So the dog food story is an interesting one, and the idea that, you know, you guys can't work either. Can you think of a specific example of a bug that we encountered, you know, as part of our internal deployment that we've been able to patch up before the product goes out?
Yes. I'm not going to mention names, but we have worked with several switch vendors, several. Some of the major players, some of the smaller players, on both wireless and wired. And so what we found is you have a piece of hardware talking to Microsoft software. Microsoft software is telling the piece of hardware where to dump the guy on a virtual LAN, okay, what IP space to give him, and things like that.
So if he's healthy, we put him on this IP.
If he's healthy, we put him in this little virtual LAN, and mm-hmm. if he's not healthy, he goes over here. And then maybe we have another one. You know, you can split it up however you want.
Okay.
We have found several issues with us on our side, on our software, and on the switches. And so I feel pretty proud about Ada 2NX in that we have made switch vendors better and our software better together by us having a forcing function of having to get my work done to have to go through that.
Okay.
And so what that means is when Server 2008 ships, and you go and look at 802.x NAP, and you're using one of the major switch vendors, it's going to work. And you're not going to have to experience what we did. So I'm happy about that.
Okay.
That's for free. You know, just buy 2008, and you get that.
Okay, so let's cover that. Now, you mentioned before, I don't need to deploy a full 2008 directory. I don't have to replace my
right.
whole network. If I want to do NAP today, what do I need to drop into place? What are the pieces I need?
So our NAP server is called Network Policy Server, NPS. And that is, if you're familiar with older products, it was used to be called IAS, Internet Authentication Server or Service. And that piece requires Server 2008. That is the NAP server. It hosts the NAP components on the server end
okay.
that allow you to configure the health policy.
And that's in the box of 2008.
That's in the box. It's a role. It's what we call now a role
okay.
in Server 2008 that's on the box.
Server manager comes up, I just check the box.
Right, you say you want network access and
okay.
policy, and that NPS is in that role.
Okay, so I just need to run up one server and enable that?
You need to prop up one server, and then you have to decide what enforcement mechanism you want to do.
Okay.
Do you want to do NAP IPsec, mm-hmm. DHCP, mm-hmm. 802.x, Terminal Server Gateway, and what about VPN? Those are the ones we support out of the box. And so that is the enforcement mechanism, meaning what network technology do your clients use to get onto the network that you want to restrict.
And so for VPN or DHCP, you would also have that Windows Server 2008.
Right. Let me add that part. So obviously there's changes in DHCP server that allow NAP to work. You must have DHCP server 2008
okay.
if you wanted to do NAP DHCP.
Okay.
You don't, obviously, if you don't want to use that. So if you wanted to use IPsec, we have another component inside of Server 2008, inside that same role, called the Health Registration Authority. That is the guy who gives you health certificates.
Okay.
So you can use a CA from down-level, a certificate authority from 2003 or 2008, doesn't matter. Your Active Directory can be old Active Directory or new, doesn't matter.
Okay.
You could actually run the VPN server and the NPS server with the same box as well.
Yeah, you can.
Well, the DHCP.
You can dual host our NAP server, NPS, with the other piece of the enforcement. Like the DHCP server can be the NPS server, and the certificate authority can be with the guy with NPS. In fact, we typically recommend that. That'll be in our best practices that we've learned from Brent.
Okay.
All right. You get some gains by running that on the same machine.
And we don't run the CA server.
You don't on the CA, right. That's true.
On the client side, you said Vista?
We support Vista when it's shipped. And we are shipping Service Pack 3 of XP, and that will have NAP in it included.
Okay. And then I guess there's a third-party story here too, right, where anybody can write their own system health agent.
Luckily, there is a third-party story. So we worked with the Trusted Computing Group, TCG, and our protocol, Statement of Health. This is the protocol that goes over the wire that does NAP, mm-hmm. Or wirelessly. That became a standard. They accepted the Statement of Health as a standard protocol that you can go and look at how that operates. So any company can go and look at that and interoperate with it. And so what that also allows you to do is somebody can write a Linux, Macintosh, name your flavor of OS, NAP client. And so what we showed in Las Vegas earlier this year was a company called Avenda Systems wrote a NAP client for Linux that was interoperating with Server 2008 and using the same policy that IT Pro configured and enforcing on Linux. And so that was probably my favorite thing at that show. It was Las Vegas Interop show. And that was the hottest thing on the floor for me because it showed a lot of people, you know, with the whole NAPMAC space, you don't want to have a story at Microsoft that says everything has to be Microsoft. That's not really a compelling story. But when you're seeing Linux, and hopefully we can show Macintosh, I want to show that as soon as possible, that you believe, you go, okay, wow, NAP interoperates. I got it. So it isn't a solution tied to Microsoft only. If you want to do some other stuff, you want to interoperate with Cisco, we'll interoperate with Cisco. Fine.
Okay, sure. Cool. All right. Well, Brett, if there were one piece of advice you were going to give someone that was about to undertake a NAP pilot, what would be that piece of advice?
So I think one of the biggest things is to first start, go into it with the idea of I'm going to get some data around this, and I'm going to actually understand what my network health compliance is. I think one of the key advantages of NAP is you can actually enforce if you want to. You can actually cut people off the network and everything else, but that scares a lot of people. And I don't know at the end of the day, that's not really what's important is to restrict the access. What's important is to increase your compliance. All right, so if you can get the data and increase the compliance with some auto remediation and everything else, you know, that could be a good way to get it into your business, actually, without really scaring the bejesus out of everybody.
So in other words, not having the... When the CTO or CFO looks at NAP, he doesn't want to think, boy, I'm going to lose revenue because I kill productivity because I restrict all my access. He's going to get insight into what he looks like, and through auto remediation, drive up compliance without losing productivity.
Well, increase productivity because you don't have to have people rebuilding their boxes when they get stuff like Blaster and other outbreaks on the network. So.
Gotcha.
All right. Jeff, where can I go if I want more information about NAP?
You can go to Microsoft.com/NAP, and that will redirect you to our TechNet site we have.
Okay.
Or you can go to blogs.technet.com/NAP, and that's the blog.
That's where we'll find your nuggets of wisdom.
My nuggets of wisdom, I'd love to... It's been suffering lately. I need to get some more up there. Okay. So I will be blogging more.
All right. Any other kind of final parting words of wisdom from you guys?
Brent?
That I can think of.
Well, my message has always been, try NAP now. And Brent is proof of that. He doesn't have to do enforcement. You can prop up two servers and run a huge...
I'm going to do enforcement.
Well, you're going to do enforcement, but you don't have to start with enforcement.
No, you don't
have to think...
You don't want to start with enforcement.
You don't want to start enforcement because you don't want to sit there and kind of... I don't think it's a... You want to take a more cautious approach in that you're in a business trying to make money. Do you want to throw everybody off the network? Potentially, no. So my message always has been, try NAP now. We have we just shipped RC0 of Server 2008. We had Beta 3 before. You can download for free. Put it up in a lab. The blog has links to lab setups. So meaning, look at all these enforcement types. Get it working in a lab. Try it yourself. Email. Look at the blog. Email me if you have trouble. We have forums out on TechNet. You can ask our engineers, the people who wrote the code, what's going wrong, and you can post logs and all sorts of things. So try it now before it ships. Get ready to do a reporting mode deployment in 2008, and there we go.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.